Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast for Live the Promise. Enjoy the conversation. So much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. So glad you tuned in, because this is one of your favorite segments. I get emails all the time. When's the doc coming back? Well, it is in time for another edition of Health and Healing with Dr. Troy, and here's my question for you, and I really want you to think about it. Don't skim over it. Take it to heart if you would, all right? Do you believe that God wants you well? Whatever ails you, maybe it's an emotional thing, or a soul sickness, or a physical ailment. Do you believe God wants you well? Do you believe Jesus when he said that one of the reasons he came is to give you life and life abundant? Maybe you've been stuck in that same place for a very long time. But here's what's true. If you want God to do something new, oftentimes you have to do something different. Well, Dr. Troy is here to answer your questions. And while I am not a doctor, I play one on radio. And we think it's hilarious and fun for me to take a swing at your questions. So I'll do that once in a while if you don't mind. So if you don't mind addressing us as Dr. Susie and Dr. Okay, I'm kidding. That's taking it a bit far. But we'll get Dr. Troy on in just a sec. We've got an upcoming Christian Writers Conference coming up this July. And we're so excited. The numbers are filling up, but it's not going to be the same if you're not there. You've got a dream to be published, or maybe you're already published. I'm telling you, the faculty we've assembled doesn't get any better than this. It's top of the line, A-list faculty of editors, agents, and experts. So no matter where you are in the journey, these are the people you want to talk to. So hop on the website, NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com. And we've even got some one-on-one appointments left with editors and agents and experts. So NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com. I hope you'll join us. It's going to be an epic conference. Let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Dr. Troy Spurl is CEO and founder of Synapse Center for Health and Healing. He travels extensively conducting seminars on disease prevention and healing through a faith-filled, healthy lifestyle. His mission is to impact the well-being of people around the world by providing solutions to complicated life issues. That's something he does very well. And to create sanctuaries that promote the restoration and perpetuation of health, happiness, and prosperity. His clinic is located in Eagan, Minnesota, and we're honored to have him back with us today. Dr. Troy, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you very much, Susie. Glad to be
here. You are such a sport. And before we get to your verse, I just got to tell our friends what a good sport you are. So this is probably one of my favorite Dr. Troy stories up to this point. But just this past week, my sister and I had back-to-back appointments, so I went in with her. And she was laying on the table, and Doc was pushing on her stomach. And he noticed something. She goes, "Oh, what's that?" And, of course, I speak right over him. "Oh, that's your ileocecal valve." And Dr. Troy says, "Is there an echo in here?" And I said, "That's funny. I hear it, too." So, anyway, Doc, thank you for putting up with me, I just want to say.
No, it's actually my pleasure.
What other doctor would allow that? And he says, "It's actually your ileocecal valve." So I know just enough to be dangerous. Kind of scary.
You were right. You were right. I just concurred. I was the second opinion on that visit.
That was hilarious. Anyway, again, thank you. You're such a good sport. You are brilliant, and I appreciate it. I've learned so much from you. And before we dig into the questions and we open the phone lines here, I know you came armed with a verse. What do you have for us today?
I have Philippians 2:3. Do nothing from rivalry or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. And for me, this is just all about imitating Christ's humility and what how he walked, and really, it's a tribute to you and what you've gone through in your journey, and acknowledgement of that as far as just being a servant leader. And when I was reflecting on the verse today, I really wanted to get something in that scope, just to show people, hopefully, just taking from your story and everything that you've been through, especially your longtime listeners, just how you've walked your walk, and just the hard work and the effort, just being a part of that. I know I came in around towards the end, but just being a part of that so far, it really is quite amazing to see the work and effort and what you put into it, and yet how you serve others. Part of that is getting to talk to the people that listen to your program and getting to work with them. Just how you are a good example of walking in humility and serving others while still going through your story. And not only you, a lot of the people that have come through that I've been able to work with as well. I want to encourage people that they can get to that same place. And we're seeing that. We're seeing people in dark places come into a better space in their life, a better season. And that's completely possible. And I look at this, I was reading through this, and just the humility that Christ worked with and walked with as he was performing miracles and as he was giving us the message he was giving. I mean, it was just absolutely unbelievable. And at the end of that verse, it talks about how in all of our relationships to one another, have that same mindset as Christ Jesus did. And that is a big part of the healing that I know you're trying to bring to your listeners, but also just people who are going through tough challenges with their health and their relationships. And so this one's a very important one, important message for me to really have people hear, because it can be very challenging, as you know, and there's a lot of darkness that can fall upon us. And just as we come out of that light, walking in humility and showing people the way and holding their hand, it's just very, very important for the healing process.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for that encouraging word. As you're talking, Doc, I'm thinking of, I think it's Isaiah 58, but it talks about loosening the chains of injustice, letting captives be set free, helping captives be set free. Then your own healing will spring speedily forth. And I know you're a huge proponent of that. And when you're ministering healing to others and health to others, something in you gets healed. I mean, this is kind of that perpetuation of life that's that circle of life, I think, that God really intends that because we can become so self-focused when you're sick, and you can identify so much more with your sickness than you do with the call in the middle of the sickness. But there's something good for the soul, isn't there, to tend to some of the needs of others while you have your own needs.
Yeah, absolutely. In that same passage, it talks about how in comfort from his love, any common sharing of the Spirit as brothers and sisters in Christ, we're meant to have compassion and share our joy and be together, lift each other up in that. So that's part of that's how it all works. And so we just see that impacting people. And as you're giving and serving others, you are lifted up in that process. And it really is I firmly believe this is a part of the healing process.
Wow, that's just beautiful. Well, the phone lines are open now. You can call with your questions. You can even call anonymously, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. I'm telling you, we could probably do a few more shows just with our backlog of emails. So if you're shy, we've got plenty to go here. But I want you to get a call in if you want, 877-933-2484. So here's one anonymous question. I'm a 30-year-old female who experiences bowel irregularities. I go pretty much every day, but feel consistently bloated and not cleared out. 5 years ago, Doc checked my thyroid, and it was normal at the time. At my very recent physical, the doctor I saw didn't do that. Nothing I try seems to make a difference. Lots of veggies, probiotics, digestive enzymes, plenty of water. I've even been on Miralax for almost seven days, and it made very little difference. Any thoughts or suggestions?
Yeah, so there's a lot of things that can go on here with that. We can start with the process of people who are dehydrated and not enough water. You can be on Miralax, but it won't pull the water into the bowel. So dehydration is something that's very, very important. Number two, there is a disorder, an infection overgrowth called SIBO, stands for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And when your good bacteria starts growing in the small intestine, it really can slow things down. It can block absorption of key nutrients, including magnesium, and we start to see bloating from that. The bacteria actually is feeding off of the food that you're supposed to be digesting and absorbing. Now, most SIBO will occur because of an imbalance with their stomach acid. So hypochloridia or low stomach acid is one of the causes of that, or excessive use of antibiotics can set that up as well. And then ileocecal valve dysfunction, which is the valve between the large and small intestine, when that gets spasmed or dysfunctional, it can start to allow the bacteria to back up into the small intestine. Vitamin D deficiency, liver congestion, and liver problems can help set up the ileocecal valve scenario. Physical problems are challenges like what we call spondylolisthesis in the low back, or stress can set up the scenario that has that valve and stomach become irregular, and we end up with what's called dysautonomic function. So the sympathetic nervous system doesn't work as well. So it's really about getting that balance of making sure that the valve's okay, make sure you don't have SIBO. And then the last thing I want to just mention on that one particular email, she talked about the thyroid being assessed. It's very important to get a full thyroid panel. Many times they'll just do TSH and then a free T4 or T3, something like that. And that's three different thyroid markers, but there's actually eight full markers, and you need to make sure they do the antibodies with that test at least once. If the antibodies come back high, what that means is your immune system is affecting the thyroid, and that will congest the liver system, and we see a lot of digestive dysfunction because of that, and it's still a thyroid problem. Mm-hmm. So getting the full thyroid panel is also very, very important. And then a couple other things like yeast infections or dysbiosis can also impact that. But she was taking probiotics. The crazy thing about SIBO is probiotics make it worse in some cases because it's the good bacteria growing in the wrong spot of the intestinal tract. It's kind of like planting a garden in your yard and it starts growing into your house. Hmm. You don't really want it in the house. You want it still out in the backyard where it's going to produce what it needs to produce. If it starts growing in the house, in the kitchen, everything, it's going to interfere with your ability to cook the food and make the food and that type of thing. So that's what we see with SIBO.
So, Doc, if they may have SIBO, would it be worth, we talk about the low FODMAP diet, and there are apps that can show you what's on that FODMAP diet. Maybe say just a quick word, if you would, about what a low FODMAP diet is and why that helps in a SIBO situation.
Yeah, so low FODMAP basically means foods that are low on the fermented scale. So a lot of times fermented food's really good for us because it has the good probiotics. It also has certain prebiotics that help feed the bacteria. So again, we've got good bacteria growing in the wrong spot, so we temporarily want to pull those foods out. Even things like onions and garlic are two of the worst offenders because they're very good for helping a dysbiosis scenario in general when it's in the colon. But when it's in the intestinal tract, it doesn't serve us quite as well. So low FODMAP basically means foods that aren't going to promote very good bacterial growth, because we want to actually get rid of the bacteria. And then once the valve in the stomach is restored, then we want to re-inoculate with the good bacteria. So literally the people start with a low FODMAP diet, fix their valve and stomach, and then they have to start transferring over to a higher FODMAP diet to stay healthy. So things like kombucha and sauerkraut all of a sudden become good for you.
Wow. We're going to pause here. So when we come back, so just a thought, friend, would it be okay if they checked out the low FODMAP and just adjusted their diet to see if that helped, or do you really need a definitive diagnosis?
You can definitely just check out the low FODMAP diet, and you can go to the IBS website for irritable bowel syndrome, and they have a great list there. It's the best list I've seen for low FODMAP.
Very good. Talking to Dr. Troy today, Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. Phone lines are open, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. You can email questions as well, Susie@myfaithradio.com. When we come back, we'll answer a question about the best kind of vitamin D, why we need omega and B12, and a few more questions like that. We'll be back in a minute.
Jesus.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. It is another edition of Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. We've got Dr. Troy Spurl of Synapse Center for Health and Healing, and his clinic is located in Eagan, Minnesota. People come from all over the country to see him, a brilliant doctor and a really great friend. And we're taking your questions today, 877-933-2484. We've got an anonymous friend who called and said, there are millions of people who are never healed or better and even misdiagnosed. How can people hang on to hope and faith? And especially referring to those with chronic illnesses. And that's such a great question, Doc, because there is a theology out there that God always heals. And so if you don't get healed, you don't have enough faith. And I have a real problem with that because I've known plenty of godly people who've gotten sick and died. So let's strike a balance here, maybe offer some hope and perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I think both are needed. So I personally believe that there is an answer to every question. There's an answer to every problem. I don't believe that I'll be the person to have that for everyone that comes to my office. And I don't believe that there is one person that will have that. I also believe, after reading a lot of Job and what he went through, that God has a plan for each and every one of us. And so it will be revealed on God's time, not ours. And mm-hmm. so there, all I've committed to personally as both a patient, because I have a story of getting sick and recovering myself, and then as a doc, I would say that I never promise people I can get them better, but I do promise them they'll never find someone that'll work harder for them, that will pray with them, that'll be there along the journey. And, you know, you know how that goes. I've not gotten everyone better that has come to me. And all my docs that when we get at conferences and stuff, we all talk about where we're struggling, the people we're not helping. And it's as hard on them as it is the people going through it in a different way, not to make light of what people are suffering from. But I have seen people struggle for 10 years and then an answer is revealed. And I've seen mm-hmm. people get answers to very complex things right away. So what I would do is encourage people to, you never give up hope, because that is a big part of it. Healing comes from that. And it's one of those scenarios when I'm stuck, I just ask God a better question. And many times answers will get revealed. It's not the way I think it's going to be. Another patient will come in and start talking about some research they saw and do I think it's relevant to their case? And I'll say, no, not your case, but the case I was just praying about it is.
Wow.
So thanks for the information. And so what I would say is if we don't have hope, we close our eyes and our ears to how God tries to talk to us in many other ways. The answers a lot of times are around us in different ways. Now, we still need to use discernment. We still need to pray about things. But a lot of times, the answers are revealed to us in many different ways and forms. And so just have our eyes open, our ears open for those scenarios and pray for answers, pray for solutions. And if not, then and just pray for understanding. And you once you get to meet God face to face and you're up in heaven, you'll get your answers. But until then, it's basically, I firmly believe that God's always working on us, with us and through us. So staying in that mindset can be very challenging, especially if you're suffering from something chronically. But getting back to that and surrounding yourself with people who understand that and lift you up in that can be very, very helpful, even when you've been suffering for so long.
Why, I want to tweet that. If we don't have hope, we'll stop looking for answers. That's so true and so good that you give up hope, your eyes are looking to the ground. And but you have hope, as you say, and you're open and you're leaning in and listening. Those answers come from all different places. And another thing we've talked about before, and I've learned, one of the big things I've learned from you is that healing, the process is like an onion. It's, you know, one layer, then the next, and never despise the days of small beginnings. Don't ever discount the smallest little nuances of healing, because every step towards healing is a step towards healing. And truly, Doc, there, oftentimes, I would say, if not all times, it requires our participation, doesn't it?
I think it requires our participation every time, almost every time.
Yeah.
And many, many people who have come through this, they start in a really low, dark place and they're suffering. And then when they do regain their health back, and many times it takes years, when they get their health back, they're thankful for having their health back. But when I ask them what's the best part, the answer is unanimously, don't get me wrong, I appreciate having my health back, but I actually love who I've become in the process.
Wow. Amen.
And that's so how God works on us and through us, and that's what they end up cherishing afterwards. They are at a much deeper place as far as their understanding of who Christ is, of who they are in Christ, and they see the world and experience the world differently, and that's what they appreciate more than just getting their health back.
So good. Got Jonathan checking in from Duluth, and just want you to know we've got about 3 minutes, a little over the 3 minutes to our hard break at the bottom, so we may have to pull this over to the other side. But Jonathan, you're on the air with Dr. Troy.
Hi. I have a salicylate intolerance, which I had a test done at Mayo Clinic. And I'm wondering what you – I never had this allergy before, and then all of a sudden one day I took ibuprofen and ended up in ER. And I had a sinus surgery, and it was a year later they recommended I go on a low salicylate diet, which I did, and I'm way better. But I also have the other part of my question was I think I've been having a lot of silent reflux, and I don't know if the two can be related or not.
Yeah,
okay,
absolutely.
Let's jump in here. Since go ahead, Doc.
So I'm just going to talk to what salicylate intolerance is. The funny thing is, at the clinic, we do roundtables with the doctors. We just roundtabled this one yesterday.
Wow.
So salicylate, as in aspirin, that's what aspirin is made from. But salicylates are actually high in a lot of different food that's really good for us, like blueberries. And so the weird thing about salicylate intolerance is that you really are reactive to foods that's really good for you, foods that are antioxidant-based. And so with that, it becomes very hard because antioxidants are one of the things that we need to help overcome intolerances and allergies and sensitivities. So this is one of the hardest scenarios you can be dealt there as far as how to correct it, Jonathan. But I want you to stick with it. You have to follow the low salicylate diet, so avoid the high salicylate foods. And funny enough, things like the ketogenic diet can actually be helpful for that temporarily because it will avoid a lot of those foods. But, I mean, we're talking good foods, Susie, like blueberries and watermelon and a lot of fruit. Wow. And so even the veggies, you have to stick with more of the low salicylate veggies, and then proteins are okay for the most part. So stick with the diet, but they do go together because once you've got that inflammatory reaction, the lining of your intestinal tract can become very much compromised. So there's a few things you can do. Number one, if you can tolerate fish oils, you want to do that, as well as vitamin D. You want to get your vitamin D levels up to as close to 80 in the blood work as possible. So they a lot of times they'll say 30 to 100 is normal, depending on which lab you use, but 80 is where you want that to land. And that'll help with the lining of the digestive tract, along with the fish oil and glutamine. There's an amino acid called glutamine. That'll help tremendously with the lining of the digestive tract. And with silent reflux, many times because of the inflammatory reaction with the salicylate reaction of the intestinal lining, the stomach will actually get caught on the diaphragm. So finding someone local, you're up in Duluth, so there are a lot of chiropractors up there that will know how to pull down on the stomach to help release it from the diaphragm, and that will help with the silent reflux. It's very, very common to have that physical reaction because of the intestinal inflammation secondary to the salicylate problem.
We've got to pause here. Thanks, Jonathan, for that question. When we come back, we're going to talk about Alzheimer's. Boy, the stuff the doctor is learning about Alzheimer's. Don't go away. Amazing insights and conversation on the other side. Thank you for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. I have my friend Dr. Troy Spurl on the show. We call it Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. We're taking your questions, 877-933-2484. I see an email come in, and we've got plenty of email questions as well. But I want to just pause here and talk about Alzheimer's, because what you're learning and what they're learning out there is mind-bending. Truly, there are people that had Alzheimer's diagnosis who lost all kinds of cognitive function. They discovered the problem, they treated the problem, and they reversed the diagnosis, and the person got their cognitive function back. That's fact, and I want you to take it from there, Doc.
Yeah, I really want to talk about this because I want people to just get a word of encouragement around this, because there's been not a lot of progress in our research, and I just have seen a lot of patients struggling with this, and I usually see the spouses of the people going through the Alzheimer's because their stress is quite a bit more actually than the Alzheimer's patients, the people living and supporting. So I want everyone to know that, number one, there are reversals. There's a doctor who has pioneered a protocol and a program. He is a professor from UCLA. He wrote a book called The End of Alzheimer's. So if you know with anyone with Alzheimer's, I encourage you to get that book. In that book, he lays out his research, and he's been researching this for quite some time. So a scientist and then doctor, he had a lab and made his discoveries in the early and mid-90s. And it flies against really what they've been looking for, because traditionally in a lot of the research, they look for a drug or medicine that will affect an enzyme that they can take. What he found here in this scenario is that that would be ineffective for the most part. And so the book really explains quite a bit how it's more of a complex scenario. But he has over 200 documented reversals of Alzheimer's right now. Many of them still have to follow the same protocol, otherwise the symptoms do start to return. But they are getting reversals as far as quality of life, and they're getting their life back. And we started doing some research ourselves and implemented some of this at the clinic with two patients. And we've seen our first reversal as well with a gentleman who couldn't identify the left side of his body or put his buttons up on his shirt together, dress himself, and now is able to quite readily as long as he follows his regimen and his program. And so we're seeing a lot of promise with this. And so I just want to touch base on just a few of the highlights, but grab the book because it'll do much more service to you. But there's basically three types of Alzheimer's he's identified, and how you treat that becomes very, very important. Number one, there is a genetic susceptibility to it, and he estimates that there's 75 million Americans right now with the gene. It's called the APOE4 gene, and if you have that gene and you have one copy of it, there's a 30% chance of you getting Alzheimer's depending on your lifestyle. And if you have two copies of that gene, there's a 50% chance of you getting Alzheimer's, again, depending on your lifestyle. And what he's finding is that the lifestyle is very important. Ultimately, it boils down to a few scenarios. I'm going to summarize this up in literally 30 seconds. Keep in mind that's 30 years of research in 30 seconds, so there's more detail to it. But we have to take care of inflammation and infection in our brain. That includes anything that causes leaky brain, like concussions, mold, biotoxins, fungus in the nasal cavities, or bacterial infections, along with intestinal inflammatory disorders. The second part of it is blood sugar regulation and making sure that it is completely regulated. And the third one is environmental toxins and other toxins. And then we have to make sure our synapses are strong. So lots of antioxidants, and we have to use our brain, being a part of community and using our brain to talk and listen and just be a part of interaction in our community is a big part once you've got those other factors. And one of the things I found just absolutely fascinating was one of the chemicals that helps to break down the plaques that sets up the Alzheimer's is the same enzyme that's needed to downregulate insulin in our body. So if your blood sugar or insulin is too high, if your insulin is too high, then you're constantly releasing that enzyme. It'll preferentially work on your body to try and get the insulin out of your body, and it won't work on the brain. So if you have Alzheimer's and you don't manage your blood sugar, then you're never going to have a recovery in that process. So the blood sugar and insulin regulation is crucial for what we know to be a big part of his protocol and his results there.
So an anti-inflammatory diet would be in order if you have Alzheimer's or even memory issues that with so low sugar, root vegetables probably. Say more maybe about an anti-inflammatory diet.
Yeah, so absolutely. So anti-inflammatory diet is going to be mostly vegetables in general with a little bit of fruit, mostly vegetables. And there'll be different things that are a little bit more highlighted, like turmeric and other herbals that work with your immune system as far as down-regulating the inflammation. So glutathione, which you get from different amino acids that come from the proteins in vegetables, also are very important. Certain foods like sugar and dairy and gluten can be pro-inflammatory. So a lot of times it's just avoiding the pro-inflammatory foods. That's another reason why we see a lot of people with challenges with brain function and brain inflammation. They just have to come off of the wheat or gluten. And Dr. Perlmutter wrote a great book years ago called Grain Brain, when he talked about inflammation in the brain and how when we are eating certain grains, that can increase the inflammation there.
Mm. Just, I'd read a few reports of they, and I might be getting this wrong, but when you are in your 50s and getting Alzheimer's type symptoms, oftentimes it's mold or biotoxins in the brain that you've been exposed repeatedly to mold. And am I reading that accurately?
Yeah, and there's one other scenario, hormones. So hormones and what we call trophic factors, when they go out of balance, so especially women, when their hormones go out of balance with menopause, that can actually trigger a mechanism if they're genetically susceptible. If they don't have the immune responses properly gauged, the plaquing that's occurring in our brain is actually an immune response. It's actually a response of our brain that is trying to protect the brain. So the plaquing is supposed to be there. So it's not the real problem. All the medications and the research, they spend over $1 billion in Alzheimer's research to try and remove the plaques. And when they remove the plaques, it doesn't change the Alzheimer's. And it's because the plaquing is supposed to be there to save the brain from these other challenges. And so the hormones are very important and trophic factors. What they found is these cells will start to release a genetic code to make a receptor. And if they don't get a certain ligand trophic factor bound to the receptor, then the nerve actually goes through natural cell death, which is a normal process with us. But we have this program in our cells to basically, it's called cell suicide, which is an awful name, but that's what it does. It's called apoptosis, natural cell death, where it induces a death so that we don't get these dysfunctional cells all the time. So our cells are replaced all the time. Naturally, white blood cells and red blood cells every 143 days, and they're made up of whatever we've been eating in the previous weeks, months, and years. And so that's why eating healthy foods allows us to make healthier cells again. But in Alzheimer's, they stop making the ligands, and so the cells start to start a self-destruct scenario that occurs. And so stopping that self-destruct scenario is what he's found a way. And amazingly enough, it boils down to the clean diet, balancing the blood sugar and insulin, making sure infection is not there, like you're talking about with mold, with fungus, I should say, and bacterial, and then making sure the hormones are balanced as well. Those are three of the big scenarios.
Mm. One of the other times you and I chatted on this show, you compared Alzheimer's to diabetes on the brain. Because your body might be able to process sugar. It's not good for you, but some people, their brains can't process the sugar. Is this all part of that conversation?
Absolutely. So that's one of the nicknames is diabetes of the brain for Alzheimer's or type 3 diabetes, and that's a big part of it. It's a big tool in the toolbox, if you will. So it's easily a third of the equation. So there's more to it than that. You need the antioxidants, and you need the other factors addressed. If you don't get rid of the inflammation or infection, it'll never go away. So you can balance the blood sugar perfectly. It won't matter because you have to get rid of whatever's causing the inflammatory response in the brain.
So the inflammatory response, once again, could be Marcon's, and that's the multiple kind of antibiotic-resistant infections kind of in the back of the sinuses. Is that right?
And, yep. Yes,
and
that's
so
true.
So you could have Marcon's and not have, like I've had it, and I'm trying to get over it, but I haven't had chronic sinus pain. I have a little pressure behind my left eye at times, but it's like you can have that Marcon's and not really know you have it, but have a suppressed immune system, right?
Yeah, that's kind of the crazy thing with this. The inflammation in the brain does not manifest as pain. It'll manifest as memory loss, can't remember people's names, can't remember why you walked into the kitchen. Words are gone. It'll manifest as sleep deprivation. It'll manifest as hormones out of balance. It'll manifest as tingling in your left arm or in some other part of your body. It'll manifest differently depending on what area of the nervous system is being affected first. It'll even start to alter possibly how you see yourself in the world. So depression can start to set in. You can start to see the negative in people around you instead of the positive. So it can start to alter our perception. It can alter our hearing. It can alter our smell. If we start to lose your smell, that's another quick one that can tell you that there's something going on there.
So the way to test for Marcon's is you get a 10-foot Q-tip and you get it rammed up into your brain. Okay, that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but it feels like that.
Yes.
So maybe say how you test for Marcon's.
Yeah, there, you can go to a website and just order the kit yourself. You don't need a doctor's note for that, and you can order the kit yourself, order it off the website, and it's basically a large Q-tip that you get. You have to get it up there real deep in the back of the sinus, and some people who can't get it up there, that's a sign that your nasal passage is closed off, and that needs to be addressed too, because something has caused congestion there and swelling of the mucous membranes. And that's a sign of your immune system, a chronically activated immune system.
Hmm. Okay, so interesting stuff. We're going to take a short question before we take our break here. Can Dr. Troy speak about severe eczema relief? What do you say?
Eczema, again, anything that happens on the skin, you want to remember that the skin is a reflection of your immune system of what's happening on the inside. So for the most part, it can be exposure to bacterial and problems on the outside, but almost always it's what's going on the inside. The first thing is to pull out the inflammatory foods. Wheat and gluten are the two most common with eczema. After that, the immune system generally is being compromised from something internally. So we see yeast infections, systemic yeast infections being a culprit, even parasites can start to set up challenges with eczema. So there's a lot of variables here. What you want to do with eczema is continue to drink lots of water, eat a low inflammatory diet, which pulls out the sugar, yeast, soy, dairy, and corn, which I know sounds a little bit crazy to some, but you pull those foods out. There's a lot of really good foods. It's how we were supposed to eat back in the day. Anyway, with pretty much vegetables and protein for the most part. And you still get your starches in there and your rice. Those are fine for most people. And start with that process. Make sure your bowels are moving, because if you're constipated at all, that can cause eczema all by itself as well. So making sure that things are moving and you're eliminating properly and reducing the inflammation is very, very important. And eczema, 90% of it's going to be treated from the inside, not the outside. So a lot of times they'll try and put creams and stuff on there. And some of them can be effective, but if you stop the cream and it comes back, it means you're not getting to the root cause. So you can use the cream to help, but then it's definitely important to start looking at what's going on the inside. And it's almost always inflammatory infection or immune compromising is another way to say it. And your immune system needs vitamin C, antioxidants. Vitamin D is very important. So identifying what you might be deficient in is very important as well.
Mm. So in other words, using just the cream is treating symptoms and not the root cause?
Correct, yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to pause here. Dr. Troy, Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. When we come back, we've got more questions, and I actually have an announcement to make. Don't go away. The phone lines are open, though, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. 933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. Let that play out a little bit. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. It's another edition of Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. He's taking your questions. I see some calls coming in as well. Sherry called in, didn't want to be on the air, from Chanhassen, said, I have an adult son with CBID. Is that common variable immune deficiency? Is there anything I can do to support his health? He's constantly ill with sinus infections and coughing. What do you say?
Ooh, that's a tough one. That's a primary immunodeficiency, and so it's all about getting your IgG antibodies up. And so I'm assuming that he's getting IgG infusions, and so that's crucial. You can't ever stop that. There are products that can help with that as well. So there is a product. It's called IG26. From a company.
we should know.
Oh, the company's name is Zymogen. So Zymogen produces a product called IG-26 that's actually very good to help with the IG production, and that's what this deficiency is. And so you have to just continually be promoting the immuno proliferation of those IG antibodies. And so you'll just require a lot of extra raw ingredients to be making those as well. The big thing is anything that depletes that is going to cause challenges. So you want to treat it almost like a leaky gut scenario. So if you look up the diet for leaky gut and you start focusing on those foods as much as possible and taking glutamine and anything that helps to repair the leaky gut, there's a great product called Repair Vite that has aloe and glutamine in it. And those are things you just have to stay on top of and can't ever pull out of your scenario. That's a genetic for life type deal, but you can support it as much as possible. And the IgG therapy, I'm assuming, helps a little bit, but not with everything, because you'll constantly be getting sick. So, you know, some people, when they get sick, they'll take the antioxidants, the vitamin C, and that helps their immune system get over that. With your son, he's got to do that all the time. But he also has to really try not to be exposed to different scenarios. So viruses during cold season, wearing a mask like they do in China and Japan a lot of times is warranted. Washing his hands and taking care of the different exposures, along with making sure, and this is very important, making sure that you are not in an environment that has any type of exposure to molds or avoiding high fungal foods is very important.
Thank you so much for that question. Well, this is where I'm going to pause because we have an announcement. I have an announcement to make, and we're going to get to Kathy maybe on the other side unless we can get this. But I just need to pause, and I'll be talking about this at the end of second hour as well. And this is bittersweet news, but it appears that my time at Faith Radio has come to a close. And I can't tell you what a difficult decision this was for me, but it really is the right one, and I need a different pace. And I'm excited about my future, I'll tell you that. And we will be launching a podcast that will also do some video interviews in the very near future. And if you want to keep up with me on interviews that we'll be doing, you can hop on my website, SusieLarsen.com, and right on the homepage, it says sign up for Susie's newsletter. That's the way we'll be able to announce it, because we don't have a definitive date. But one of the things I want you to know is Dr. Troy and I will be doing some interviews, and we're actually going to do an event at his clinic. There'll be obviously limited seating, but all of that information we'll be getting out to you in the near future. But I also just want to say a special thanks to Dr. Troy. He's just invested so much in our listeners. You won't hear the last of him because we'll be connecting together on the podcast and, as I said, doing some events at his clinic. But, Doc, just in front of everybody, I want to say just a heartfelt thank you for the way you've poured into our listeners so selflessly. We just want to say we love you and we appreciate you so much.
Well, I appreciate that, Susie.
And it's been a really amazing run, I'll tell you. Today's not my last day, but next Thursday is my last day. And second hour will be Talk to Me Thursday, and I actually won't have a question. I'll just want to talk with you. I hope you'll call in and chat with me. You know, God is always the God of new beginnings, and he's up to something new, and I'm very excited about it. And so I just need you to know that. Again, if you want to keep up with where we're going with the podcast and our upcoming events at Doc's clinic, hop on the website, SusieLarsen.com, and check out the sign up for the newsletter. You'll get information that way. And I'm sure on Synapse's website, you'll find some information as well. Right, Doc? When we have an event, you'll have some dates on the website.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, very good. Okay, we've got a few minutes left at the top of the hour, so let's grab Kathy from Madison. Kathy, thanks for holding. You're on the air with Dr. Troy.
Hi. What a shock. Your news. Yeah. I'm just like, oh.
I know. It's hard. And I'm sorry. I'm sure it was jarring for you. You're coming back to ask a question. Sorry about that.
I was diagnosed with osteopenia some time ago. Sorry, I just introduced that I'm crying about. But now I have osteoporosis, they say, and they want me to start taking Fosamax. And I take a calcium supplement, and I've exercised for years and years. And I started walking last summer when I retired during the summer, and I just, there's nobody in my family that has osteoporosis or osteopenia, and I'm just like, I wish there was something dietary-wise that I could take instead of Fosamax.
Well, there's actually, there is quite a bit you can do, and I think you kind of summed it up with choking on your words there a little bit there, Kathy, for all of us as well. So we're celebrating Susie, but also it's a hard to just kind of talk right afterwards because that's not your fault. Mm-hmm. I'm just validating what Kathy was going through there because I'm going through it a little bit myself, and I even knew she was about to say that. So so I'm with you on that one, Kathy. Mm-hmm. As far as the osteoporosis, osteopenia, there's a lot more to it than calcium. So the first thing to talk about is your exercise is great. So we want to keep using your muscles. And when you pull and use your muscles, they pull on the bone and it has more calcium being laid down in the bone. And so one of the things that can set that off is a bunch of different scenarios. So first of all, estrogen and your hormones, those very much affect your bone strength, as does vitamin D is very important. So we have to make sure vitamin D deficiency is addressed, your estrogen or hormone imbalances is addressed, and then the acidity of the body. When you become very acidic, your body will look for the best alkalizers in the body, so it'll start to pull from the bone. Now, one of the crazy things is that as women in particular go through changes, whether it be with pregnancy or with actual menopause, there is bone loss that occurs each and every time just because of the nutrient need elsewhere in the body with the baby or with the change of hormones with estrogen. So what we see is a need for the calcium. It'll pull it from the bone. And there are toxic metals in our environment. Lead is one of them. And lead is stored in bone. So a lot of times lead gets released and we see this process of osteopenia, osteoporosis, and lead toxicity can be a part of that, which then creates a more acidic environment. So it's a bit of a complex scenario. It's more than just taking a calcium pill, but I strongly encourage you to get your vitamin D checked, keep exercising, drink lots of water to flush out any toxins, keep the bowels moving, and if you can, get assessed for any type of estrogen or hormonal imbalances, depending on where you are in your cycle of life that way. And then acidity, making sure that you're really looking at consuming high alkaline foods. And again, when we start to see hormonal changes, there's a craving that creeps up in there, and it's sugar. And sugar can cause an inflammatory reaction, which then sets up an acidic environment, which causes you to lose more calcium. So be very, very sensitive to other chemicals that you're putting on your body in the form of makeup or skincare lotions, because anything that doesn't allow for good skin health that's got some chemicals in it can also start to cause problems with calcium. I had a gal in her late 40s start to develop osteoporosis, and she was doing everything well. We couldn't figure out what was going on, and it ended up being her makeup. There were some toxins in her makeup that were setting off a series of chemical reactions that once we corrected that and she went back to her old makeup, we were able to stop the process and then start to rebuild again.
We got to cut out of this hour. Kathy, thank you. And again, I wish I could
have
you.
I had my vitamin D checked.
We have to pause here. Hard out here. Sorry about that. This is hour one. It's over. Hour two is coming up next. Kathy, thanks for your call. More with Dr. Troy when we return. For listening to this conversation from Live the Promise. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend. Help grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player, and then never miss a show.